You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome everybody. You are officially on the couch, as you always are, here with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen. We are Wednesday, Pacific Standard Time, 12 noon, and there goes my desk jiggling. Okay, there. Welcome everybody. So nice to have you here. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects today, relationships, specifically toxic relationships. And we have talked about this in the past, but my special guest, who we're going to talk to in just a bit, has written one of the best books on understanding toxic relationships, where they come from, some of our early environmental trauma, and how we can deal with those, possibly get out of those and work through our own stuff in order to understand them. And, you know, a lot of us, or maybe some of our best friends, have suffered from a lot of emotional instability or toxic relationships. It doesn't have to be abuse physically. It can also be emotional abuse. As a matter of fact, that's one of the most common types of abuse that we all deal with, as my special guest psychotherapist will tell you about. But this book that we're going to be talking about is the best one that I've read. Let's bring her on, Jamie Mahler, right now. Jamie, nice to have you with me.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Oh, man, what a great book. I'm telling you, you put so much into this. Here it is.
Ooh, yeah, right? Like we have 20 twinsies.
Let's do a twinsies, girl. Here we go. There it is. Okay, there you go. All right. Now, it's called Toxic Relationship Recovery. Oh my gosh, what a great title. Your Guide to Identifying Toxic Partners, Leaving Unhealthy Dynamics, and Healing Emotional Wounds After Breakup. This is the one of probably the most thorough books I've ever read on helping you better understand the dynamics of toxic relationships, folks. How to spot, and you didn't really say that N-word. Much.
I didn't say the narcissist. I think it might have slipped once. We were trying to figure it out. I was like, it might be in there once, but I tried not to say it. Yeah.
The narcissist word did not come up, and I was very proud of you because it's so easy for us to say that, right? Good for you. So we're going to talk more about the book and how to spot folks who are pretty toxic to us and how to heal, et cetera, as I said in the intro. But first, let me give your bio to folks out there, because you are rocking it, girl. Jamie Mahler is a New York psychotherapist, mental health educator, relationship specialist, trauma specialist, and she's behind the popular Recollected Self social media brand. All right, you gotta do that, guys. You gotta recollect yourself, you know. Jamie's therapeutic education on trauma and toxic relationships has gone viral on TikTok. Come on, you have had to see her. She's all over the place. Instagram, she's on YouTube, millions of viewers and likes, by the way. Jamie's also a noted mental health contributor for outlets like USA Today. I'm sure you've seen her on NBC News, Bustle, Insider, a lot more. So anyway, we're going to be talking about her latest book. And also, she has a popular mental health podcast called Unlearned. Yeah. As in, you got to hear and learn about this stuff.
Yeah.
And things we can't unhear anymore.
Yeah. You got to learn and unlearn things.
There you go. Exactly. Well, bravo on this book. And I'm blown away, and I'm really happy to give this book to a lot of my clients or patients, you know, because this is, these are questions that they're asking every day in my therapy sessions.
Right.
That need to be answered, and they are being answered in your book. So I love to find out more about people and what's within them who are offering these gifts to all of my listeners. So what was it that made you personally decide to write this book?
I've been through quite a journey myself. So, I like to actually really use that as a vehicle to destigmatize this type of conversation, right? Love begets trauma. And when we don't unlearn and we don't untangle some of the complex things that happen to us, it really can turn into toxic traits, which in turn turn into toxic relationships. And what my real passion, you know, I tell some people the background of this story is I really wanted to, if you talk to my publisher, they'd be like, wow, you wanted to shoot the moon. I basically wanted this chapter to be, you know, partner, workplace, sibling, family, you know, mentors. Like I wanted every chapter to be like a section of someone's life. And then see all of the ways those different elements can show up in people, right? The toxic trait. And, you know, my trusty publisher was like, great idea. that book is like, it's not possible, but they were basically saying, let's just, you know, focus on one thing right now and maybe, you know, whatever. So we focused on intimate partnerships because honestly, if you look at the pop culture right now, if you look at friends and family, yes, of course there's toxic workplaces and families and different systems that are going on. But one of the things that's hits home for all of us, quite literally home, is who we live with, who's our toxic partner. And so that really did hone it in for me. They were like, stick to it, put your head down, finish that book. And that's kind of the story behind it. I really, I have a lot of, you know, history with some of the systems that I was exposed to and my own traumas, but I channeled a lot of that and I put it into the partnership model. And that's what we got. We got the Toxic Relationship Recovery book. Yeah.
It was awesome. Great. Isn't that true? I mean, when we're writing a book or a blog or any kind of piece or talking about it on the air, it's usually because we have suffered those relationships or we've been in that situation. We're like, whoa, that's why I have become a psychotherapist or a psychologist or whatever, because I really want to find out why I bought into all that. And also, you know, it's like, why I feel like I'm going crazy.
right. So, exactly.
Good for you.
I mean, one of the coolest things, I just got interviewed. I don't know if you follow the story about the NXIVM cult. But I didn't even put this together until,
You.
So actually, if you turn the book around, Sarah's that in the vow. She's the woman that was the whistleblower of NXIVM. I didn't put it together until she just, I mean, she was blown away. I was humbled. I was like, whoa, Sarah, like you really resonate with this.
Right, exactly.
She put it together for me for people who've been in high demand control groups or cults. She's like, this book needs to be in their hands. And it's just, it's the more the book is, you know, getting into people's hands, the more it's evolving into like, oh, wait, maybe the substance abuse community could use this. And maybe the cult community, like recovery, could use this. And I'm like, you know what? I welcome it all. But also, I'm so happy to hear that it is written in a way to be relevant to more than just, well, I hear this, you know, I love my partner. I don't see any problems. Should I pick up the book? And I've had so many people reach out to me that they're like, I'm starting it. I love my husband. I don't have the healthiest family and it's really helping me. So I love hearing that. I love that they're able to kind of do that deciphering themselves.
Exactly.
And they're able to extract the information they need. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Jamie, I love the way also you do refer to the environmental upbringing and, you know, the family of origin and how their behaviors, they know not what they do.
The
modeling is huge, and our partners, you know, how they've turned out too based on their background. So what is toxic relationship recovery? What do you mean by recovery?
So
and
really,
we'll get into the trenches with that one.
Yeah, so really what I try to explain to people is one of the things I started seeing in my work, and it's kind of a tragedy that I feel strongly about when people, I call it in the book, the common denominator problem, or feeling as though you're the common denominator. And there's, you know, there are some folks that you know where you're like, man, I don't think that person can catch a break. Like they've been married two or three times. Like, you know, that seems like a good guy, but, or the, a a good person or whatever, that best friend, your best woman friend or something. And you're like, I know her. So what is happening?
Right.
With types of dynamics that they're finding themselves in. And that's where people get really upset. They go, don't you dare victim blame. And I'm like, listen, this is not what this book is about. This book is not about victim blaming. This book is not about saying you're the problem.
Yeah.
You're the problem.
Yeah.
It really is about deconstructing and untangling how complex toxic relationships can be. Because yes, we could be the toxic partner, or we could be pretty stable.
Right.
And find ourselves drawn to helping, and then our perception of helping is now distorted. And then when we find the right type of person, they see that as, ooh, this person's primed to be manipulated. Right. And so what ends up happening is, okay, well, I found out that they were doing this and I'm going to break up with them.
Right.
So they break up. And when you go, what's toxic relationship recovery? My goal for this book truly is to help people stop that cycle. I'm being serious.
Right.
They feel like everyone they meet happens to fall into this archetype. And I go, I want to say it's an accident, but it's not when you untangle it. When you untangle it, you realize that our hopes, our desires, our aspirations, our wants, they're driven from a place of like normalized relationships in the past or normalized behaviors. And so, some people can be like, I never would pick someone purposefully that would hurt me.
Right.
Yet somehow I find a partner that's so similar to my ex, and I blink and I'm in the exact relationship I was in last year with a different person. And that's when I wrote this book, where I'm like, listen, we can stop that. We just have to put in a little bit of work to untangle some of the stuff that led up to that decision.
Oh, beautiful, Jamie. And, you know, the self-exploration tools you talk about, you know, getting, let's identify some of the issues we're dealing with, behaviors, et cetera. Can we briefly touch on some of the factors while growing up, perhaps in our home, from our parents? And this is not blaming mommy and daddy, maybe, you know, this is just talking about the reality of some of the dysfunctional things going on in the home that may make us become victims, I might say, or, you know, taking
or,
in these,
or vulnerable.
Or vulnerable. I like that word.
Yeah, we're vulnerable. More vulnerable. For
And or kind of turn us into narcissists. Oh, there I go. I said it. Or people who are manipulative and not healthy.
So if we take on this role of, just take a step back and think of our models, right? And what I mean by models, if this is a newer term, it's not just, and this is, you know, some people are going to get at me that I might be getting their goat right now, but I know people want it to always be the parents. And for some family systems, it can be modeled from the parents or from the relationships in that family. And what I like to point out in the book is that there are so many different normalized models that enter our life in our childhood, in our early adulthood, that really do create an impact. This is where you get the whole, I've had clients that go, Jamie, I hear the culture try to blame my parents, but I wish my relationship was like my parents. I love the way my parents like raised me. I got amazing memories. I loved them. So how did this happen to me? And they asked this question, like this huge mammoth of a question. And I wish it was just one answer. But what I would tell people is, we are sponges. And we absorb the relationships that are normed around us. So yes, we can absorb partial, some partial amazing healthy models. And we could also be, let's say we're in a sorority and everyone's, I mean, I'd hope there's no one in a sorority like this, but let's say the sorority has learned
right.
petty, catty, revenge-like behavior. Maybe right. they talk crap about their boyfriends all the time, and they just normalize very unhealthy experiences. Yeah. And so when you're in college, when you start acting like that, or the flip side, your partner starts acting like that, you're like, yeah, part of the course, right? Like, this is what happens in my friends' dynamics.
Right.
I see them act like this, right? And so I'm just giving an example of how easily a normal, normal, what is that? But like a typical,
right.
a typical parenting situation that could be considered psychologically a very nourishing model or foundation could eventually enter into not as high as a priority, and all of a sudden the peer group or the media exposure is now becoming more and more. Look at this day and age. Like, I can't go 2 minutes without hearing about Love Show, Boat Island, Captain Yacht Ship.
I don't know. It's like, no.
I'm not even trying to crap all over it. But what I'm saying is those shows hit because they're normalizing the chaos.
Yes, they are.
Chaos.
And we become, not we. I don't, but
no, we can use the collective we though.
We become really addicted to those. It's like, oh my God, I got to find out what her reaction is to what he did or said, because she's going to find, it's like, stop. No, this is, you're just growing that neural weird giant pattern that's saying, love this drama. Why do I love this drama? Ooh, that makes me feel so comfortable because it's normal. You know, not comfortable anymore.
And you know what I say? And this is a personal anecdote. I'm the first to say, like, I had some of these traits in the book. I tell people, don't be scared when you're reading the book and you hear traits you've used or things you've done. These are things that I've personally had to unlearn and overcome as well. And I'm doing these things to this day to try to check myself. Ooh, don't go that route. You want to go that petty route. Don't do that. Right?
Good for you. I mean, no self-blaming. You know, it's just being the observer.
You have to.
Saying, damn, I do that too. Gee, maybe I better rethink that.
So I tell people, don't be scared if you come across something that, like, reminds you of a behavior, because it's not the book is trying to not use the word toxic as a weapon. It's used as an awareness. So if I can say, yep, that behavior was not helpful, it was very harmful, I treated my friend very poorly right there, can I do to help navigate that, right? What can I help unlearn about that, right? And then we have the flip side where something harmful is happening to you. Now you have the language and you can say, oh, they just redirected that because they didn't want to hold themselves accountable. All right, so that's what I'm dealing with, right?
Right.
Now you can notice what's happening to you. And then you can notice when it's starting to infiltrate your psyche and you're normalizing that to other people. Yeah.
Wow, is that good? I mean, it's just terrific. By the way, in case you just tuned in here on my podcast, the book is amazing. It is, Jamie Ma, you've done it.
Aww.
Toxic Relationship Recovery. It helps you really recover and gets into all the weeds about how to identify, which we're going to do in just a bit, how to identify toxic partners' behaviors and our own behaviors in reaction to that, as well as what we've done for so long in order to, you know, whatever, push it down, negate it, normalize it, all that stuff. So let's talk about some of the toxic behaviors that some partners, friends, may have that are really some of the most common that we can go,
I mean, this is why I tried to write the book almost for the spectrum we see of toxic traits, because yes, we can see the most extreme of the extreme where the horror documentary series get made out of them, right? Or we could see what I would call more of like the practical side of things. Like, and I don't want to say it's practical to harm people. I'm saying it's more of what it's feet on the ground, right? Lived experience.
Right.
This is what it feels like in a typical experience. And so what that would look like would be, I mean, I'm just going to rattle off a few.
Let's go. Yeah.
But for example, passive aggressiveness, instead of trying to dialogue about a conflict, being just going and beating around the bush, refusing to maybe both parties are doing this, refusing to acknowledge the elephant in the room. There is a conflict. There is a tension. We are having a hard time. Someone is going through an emotional like roller coaster.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to talk about it, right? So
some
of those behaviors, while people are like, no, I'm just being avoidant, I don't really want to deal with it, I go, it can turn toxic when you are purposefully not allowing the conversation to move forward, which is what we see in some of these examples in the book. And
for
anyone who's tuning in, that's where I think the book shines. It does put your feet on the ground in people's living rooms when they're fighting or dialoguing. Yes. And I give examples of like, hey, this person came home late and they're having a hard time with it and they're being passive aggressive. What does that look like? Right? Oh, well, your dinner's cold. Your dinner's cold. What do you want me to do about that? You know, like that. Something simple as that. People are like, oh my God, I've done that. I'm like, listen, don't be scared. Don't be scared if you said it.
Yeah.
I've done these things too. yet, what if there was a better way to dialogue that pain point? We can talk about, and I use this word in the book, thematic depth. We can go to the depth of the pain and we can extract the theme. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about cool dinners, or are we talking about maybe the person you're married to is struggling with work-life balance and they're spending 65 hours at work you need to have a dialogue about how that's impacting the relationship.
Right. Exactly.
So what was that? We distilled down the point. We went to the deep. We extracted the theme. And we were willing to dialogue about that,
right?
That is where people can make progress.
Where
people get stuck, though, is they make it about the dinner.
Right.
They make it about the trash can not getting put out.
Right.
They make it about the dog not getting fed. Right. I'm being serious. They get stuck for years.
True. Yes, years.
About,
well,
it's just the trash. It's the trash can. It's every time I go, do you not feel respected? Does this not feel like a mutual shared relationship?
Right.
What's the theme that's getting pulled out of that?
Yes.
But then if they don't see it, how could your partner see it? They just think, man, she really cares about this trash can. Right? Like if you don't see it, they're probably not going to also get there either. So some of this is a both and I use that word a lot in the book. It is a both and. It's both the partner asking themselves, wait, maybe I am not being respectful when I come home from work, don't say a word to her at all, and go up in my room. Like maybe that isn't helpful to the relationship, right?
And
then the other partner going, maybe it's not about the dinner. Maybe I need to try to figure out what's going on and where I feel disrespected. And this book gives you that language.
Yes, exactly.
That language we need.
Yes. It's like go and really explore a little deeper about where these, you know, the surface complaints are coming from. What is that?
Sure.
What's the real inner, you know, feeling that you're experiencing? So let's take that scenario and we'll have the person coming home really late who sort of does that maybe a little too consistently.
Right.
And you know, you've made the dinner and you say, well, the dinner's cold. What if that person has got other things that they're not telling you about? Maybe cheating or they just don't care about you or the dinner. They're going to do what they want to do. So I'm talking about toxic partners specifically.
Yeah, exactly.
What if they don't have a hard time with work-life balance? They're out drinking with their friends and going to clubs or whatever, and they're married or living with someone. So Can we talk? Let's talk about some of those harmful, sort of toxic behaviors. Gaslighting, passive aggression, testing loyal boundary, overstepping boundaries, all of those kind of things that we see.
Sure. I mean, because there's the everyday surface level stuff, and then there is getting to the point where the relationship is starting to actually crumble already. And of course, when it's crumbling, people are going to turn to drinking with their friends, maybe another person. And, you know, a lot of people are like, deal breaker, deal breaker, deal breaker. And I go, I know nobody wants to hear this. It sounds very Esther Perel-like, but I listen, we do have to dialogue about this relationship is in a state of like, it's starting to disintegrate. Okay. So when that happens, we have to, it's very tricky. We almost have to, I love her terminology. It's almost like when you act like the old relationship no longer exists anymore because it's already starting to disintegrate. You both have to make a decision.
Right.
Do you want to put in the level of effort it is going to take to build the emotional skill set to dialogue with each other in a healthy way without criticism or contempt? If you can sit there and let's say you're sitting at that dinner table with the cold plate of dinner, you know for a fact they're over with whoever, and you're on to it, right? Let's say you're on to it, right?
Yeah,
you're like, oh my God, here we go.
There we go. Yeah.
And maybe you've even alluded to the fact, maybe you've used passive aggression to be like, yes, you sure have an interesting scent of cologne on or something. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like,
you could
use that counter skill. You know, you're using a counter, right? You're using the passive aggression right back.
Yeah.
But what I would say then is there is a soul drive. Like, you have to go deep inside of you and be like, what's it going to take to mend this type of relationship? And I've said it in a couple of other interviews, but I go, if you're willing to do the work to ask yourself, why am I staying in a relationship that doesn't exist? Because the relationship doesn't exist if they're off with somebody else and they come home and pretend nothing happens. Like, that clearly something's going on wrong.
Right. Absolutely.
But you could rebuild a new one. And people do that. People are like, I mean, I got through the affair. Like, we rebuilt it. I go, I'm not going to contest that at all. You can rebuild a relationship.
Yeah.
The problem is when you're in that moment, you have to have a real heart to heart, not with your partner, with yourself.
Right.
You have to say, am I able to put in this level of effort to build the emotional skills it's going to take to dialogue through this, to hold the emotional pain of trauma of getting through this? Because if I don't know if I can answer that question, maybe it's time to at least create enough of a pause to do that level of self-reflection. Right? Because a lot of people want to run to their partner and be like, screw you. And
you're right.
It is never okay. Sure. I try to explain this to people. I'm not ever going to say, that's totally fine. Like, do whatever you want and be with whoever. No, it's never okay to be in a relationship you're not consenting to. And that's the language I use.
Right.
When you are in a relationship where someone's lying about finances, lying about sleeping with someone, lying about not have, like, saying they have a job and they don't have a job, right? Lying about paying the mortgage.
You
are in that relationship in a fully informed state.
Yes.
You are existing in that house thinking the bill is paid because they're in charge of the finances.
Yep.
You are coming home and making dinner thinking that they're not sleeping with someone in this case, and you are consenting to that, right? So when I tell people, you never deserve to be tolerated. And you never deserve to be in a relationship.
No, exactly.
You don't consent.
Right.
And so that's really what happens with toxic relationships. They lead you into deeper and deeper into the deception. They can go deeper and deeper. And they might even really commit. They might be like, you got to cover for me and I got to do this. And don't, you know, the redirect the bank calls if there's a financial problem, right? And I sit there and I go, yes, that's derived from their own trauma. It's derived from their own shame. I understand and can hold compassion for the level of trauma you have to commit to that level of redirection and deception, right? You do have to have a significant level of trauma to be able to go that deep into it.
That's true.
This is a both and. There is a person on the other side of your behavior that's enduring the implications of that deception.
Absolutely.
And so when we're entangling this and when you're like, well, what would you say? I would say, yes, if you come to the conclusion where you're like, I would like to try. This is what I would tell that person. I would say, it's not always about run, leave. You always have to leave.
Right.
Sometimes you're not going to leave.
Right.
Well, what I will remind you is there's proof in the pattern.
Yep.
And what, and I can expand on that, but there's proof in the pattern of the behavior.
Right. Right.
And you are who you continue to be.
Yes. Exactly.
You are who you continue to be.
Right.
Right. Ooh, that was always so humbling for me when I was
Yes.
But
yes.
When I teach that now.
Right.
You are who you continue to be. So when someone comes at you and says, I'm going to change. I get it. I understand.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I'm going to stop. No. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to call you a curse word in the middle of our fights anymore. I'm not going to throw the lamp. I'm not going to cheat on you anymore. Okay, that's fine. And you know what? There might be people that go on and cheat a few more times or whatever. And what you need to be aware of, though, is proof being in the pattern. And who are they continuing to be? Not what they are continuing to say.
Right, exactly.
Who are they continuing to be?
Right.
And even in that, even if they're making missteps, even if this partner is like making some poor choices, they went back, you know, they said they were getting sober, you found a bottle of alcohol. You're like, oh, there's another setback that I thought they were there. They made it so far. I want to remind you, even when someone's making small steps of recovery, you don't always have to throw in the towel, but you have to have a threshold. And
right.
What I mean by that is the worst case scenarios that I work with are people that do not have a limit. And I make the joke of, Mean Girls. I go, we're not going to be Mean Girls. We're not Lindsay Lohan.
Right.
The limit does not exist. There is a limit here,
I
go, there is a limit here, and people go, but Jamie, unconditional love, and who am I? I'm not a perfect person, and I go, listen, you have to have a threshold of the way someone's going to treat you,
right?
So if someone continually calls you, the C word while you're fighting, or continually. refuses to help themselves get to a point of recovery, we have to take that seriously.
Exactly.
And that's what I mean by the threshold question. Sometimes, this is in the book, I can't quote the page, so I'm not there yet, but whatever page it's on, I call recalibrating your threshold.
Yep.
Because when you go in through this trauma cycle and you get deeper into the relationship, your threshold gets too high. You endure too much. There's too much abuse. There's too many emotional cuts. There's too many things getting thrown at you.
Yeah.
And your threshold gets too high. So at this point, we have to recalibrate.
That's
we have to actually,
so important.
Like a machine.
Right.
Say,
Wait a minute.
Wait, these numbers are off.
Right. Right. This keeps happening. I mean, and I'm sure you have had patients who come to you, and as I have, and you know, it's like, well, let's just use he as the perpetrator, the perpetrator, as you say, precipitator, right? And the tolerator. So the tolerator will come to me and they'll say, oh my God, he demeans me. Everybody thinks he's wonderful out there in public. Say, oh, he's such a great guy. And when we go on trips and all that, but he demeans me, he demands sex. He tells me I don't look up to par. I'm gaining weight. He's late all the time. He lies. I catch him in lies, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll say what are some of the positives about this relationship and this person? Well, he's a really good cook. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's usually in a good mood when we're on vacation. Okay, and that's about it. So it's kind of, you know, when, like you said, when are you going to come to that point where you recalibrate? Say, hold the phone here. Something's not right, and it keeps happening. And we really reexamine being in the now, being the observer. How do I feel? And all those wonderful tips that you have in your book, Toxic Relationship Recovery. Jamie Mahler, don't miss it. It's good. It is one of the best books on recovery. No, it is. I'm telling you, girl. You knocked it out of the park. And so let's get into sort of self-healing, since we kind of touched on some of this stuff. Let's talk about going within. You talk about sort of going within, and you know, to your point of recalibrating and examining, you know, being authentic with ourselves.
Sure.
So what are some of the tools we can use to really keep it real and look at ourselves?
Right. I mean, if you just look at the chapter titles, it's just kind of like a little roadmap. But truly, I talk about the vision you have for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way you see yourself. Like, let's say the relationship's over, right? Let's just give this example.
Yeah.
How do you talk to yourself? What does your inner narrative sound like
when you
make a mistake? When you drop a glass of water?
Right.
Right? When you walk in front of a mirror, when you just don't accomplish something fast enough. What is your inner dialogue? Because I tell people in this book, the saddest thing I see is when people get out and they're still stuck in a toxic relationship with themselves.
Yes.
It's
boy, is that true?
Tragic.
Yep. Boy, is that true, Jamie? Yeah.
Tragic, right? Yeah. And that's one of the points where I go, listen, to really break this cycle is to eliminate the voices or the lingering, I call it a few things in the book, but really those lingering narratives,
right?
That they're like Klingons, right? They cling, right. They clung on.
Right.
It could have been years ago, right? It could have been a relationship from a long time ago where one partner said they hated your short hair. And you never cut it again.
Yes.
And then my question in the book is, what kind of length of hair do you like?
Right.
Have you ever untangled that for yourself? Well, I'm too scared because they said that it would, that guy like years ago said, and I go, well, then that's the voice that's adhered into your brain right now. We have to extract that voice, and we have to dampen that voice. And what do we have to do? We have to amplify our internal belief or our internal authentic expression, right?
Yes.
So if my authentic expression is, you know what? I've always wanted to do kind of a really cool, fun, chunky hair.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the voice stopping you from doing that? Well, every time I go to the hairdresser and I say I want to do it, immediately I hear a voice that says you're ugly with short hair, and I go, who told you you're ugly with short hair?
Right.
Sometimes people say it's their partner, sometimes people say it's their dad or their coach or something.
Sure.
But I go, really, when we talk about toxic relationship recovery, this is a twofold book. We're talking about a partner, but we are also talking about extracting the voices that came from the past that are currently getting embodied in the current moment with you. That's what's happening.
Right.
And so when you're asking, like, how do we do that? I mean, you were talking about some people to get to the point of like breaking up or to get to the point of like never repeating the cycle. I made a post on this, and usually you hear this terminology around substance abuse, but I'm using this terminology around that toxic trait, the recovery from that voice that's in our head. and I use the word rock bottom. I go, you know, when we don't have a threshold, we're basically, we're going full force toward rock bottom. And when people are like, what is our rock bottom, right? Like, what is our rock bottom? And you'd be surprised what people say. They're like, my rock bottom in a relationship is that I was excited that I was on a date and I poured out, you know, my heart to them. And they were like, I like your nail polish. And I'm like, like, you do see what I'm saying? Like, the standard, is so low that, like, they will take anything. They'll take breadcrumbs of validation. They'll take breadcrumbs. Right, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Of
any sense of, like, being seen.
Right.
Right? And I go, listen, like, if we're at rock bottom, I fully believe that sometimes we're not meeting the worst of ourselves. I think we're meeting the best version of ourselves that finally is speaking and saying, you deserve so much more than this feeling.
Yes.
People go, I met the worst of myself. And I go, I don't think you did.
Right.
I think if you take that voice, and you know that that voice goes, you are so much more valuable in this moment.
Yes.
That is where you can make a shift.
Right. The huge. What great advice, Jamie. That's amazing. You know, a lot of people, you know, it's called crazy making. You know all about that, right? Because when we're in a toxic relationship with someone, we begin to doubt ourselves. Ooh, maybe I am not good enough. Maybe I am too fat. Maybe, maybe I am... God, maybe there is something, you know, the gaslighting. Wow, are you, when they say, are you okay? Yeah. Maybe I am not a, gosh, maybe
like you're dramatic. Am I dramatic? Like, you know what I mean? You ask that question inside of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And so yes. And that's what part of your book tells to folks to work through that inner self, you know, to restructure who you are. What do you want? And my point to that also was sometimes we get so covered over with that, I guess, hypnotist who's trained our brain patterns to be that certain way. And I'm sorry, but we've allowed it. But we don't know what we want. Oh, my gosh. And you have such wonderful ideas to discover who we are in your book. I mean, really, let's go within and sort some things out and love that which you are and be okay with it and stop using those little, you know, messages that that person in that toxic relationship was giving you and stuff that came from the past, you know. So we're just about out of time.
Yeah.
I knew this was going to race by because I just, you know, I have so many great questions.
No,
but you have so many great answers. Just, oh, wow. Anyway, what is the best way that viewers and listeners can find out more about you and get in touch with you and get your book? More importantly, get your book. Here it is.
Yeah. So you can learn more about me. I offer a bunch of different programs. I have some coaching programs. I have some peer programs. I have some amazing resources. If you want to work with me, people think it's not possible to work with me more personally. And it is.
Sure.
You just have to kind of go into my website, look and see what's offered.
Yeah.
And so recollectedself.com is my website. And all of my handles on all the socials is the same, Recollected Self. And then if you would like to buy the book, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it in person at Barnes & Noble. It's online in Barnes & Noble. You can also find it at Books A Million or Target.com. I don't think it's physically in the Target yet, but it is on Target.com. If you want to learn more or if you want to dive deeper into my, you know, the radio kind of side of stuff, I do have my podcast Unlearned. We've going at it for almost a year and a half now.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can interact with me. And honestly, a lot of people, this happens when your brand gets a little bit bigger. Many people think I'm like not accessible. And I tell you, I read your emails. Like, I actually do read your emails. So
that's what I love about you. That's so awesome.
Oh yeah. I read your emails. So if you have any feedback on the book, unfortunately, obviously, like individual questions on relationships, I can't field those. But if you have a review on the book or you have any feedback on the podcast or the book, feel free to email me directly. And if you would like to work with me, go to my website.
Awesome. Jamie Mahler, thank you so much for being on the couch with me today.
Yes, absolutely. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Great book. I am so blown away. I'm going to use it for my clients so they can get some more help about overcoming toxic relationships and identifying them. And by the way, thank you so much for all you do for each other and everybody else.
Thank you.
Really
thank you
appreciate
for,
it.
Thank you to your listeners for doing all this work and listening to you too. Absolutely.
All right. Take good care.
Thanks.
We'll talk again soon.
Bye.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I'll be back next week. We're going to learn about anxiety and depression next week from an expert, so you can get a handle on that a little bit more in your life, which we all are experiencing now, it seems like. All right. Have a great day. And as I always do say, take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.